If Feta pools proved to be viable, we could find ourselves in a world where Bitcoin mining pool centralization risk is significantly reduced, and the worries that many have today cease to exist. By creating a federation of different miners who act as guardians of a mint dedicated to producing blocks and distributing rewards, you create a completely new and more robust incentive model at the pool layer. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And I wanted to do the Bitcoin Basics episode 3 today, but after going through like a ton of notes and trying to collect my thoughts on exactly what I want to cover about Bitcoin keys, I realized I wasn't going to finish it, and this was something that is just a really fascinating idea. This is from Marty's Bent, which is Marty's daily newsletter. If you don't read it, I highly, highly recommend it. He's always got some, it's entertaining, it's short, and he covers a lot of news and also just really cool ideas. This being a prime example of a clever way to rethink how we think of services and custodians in the Bitcoin space, because like that is the unique and incredible potential of Bitcoin, is that, and this is like the beauty and what I talk about with Lightning and stuff all the time, and it's very in line with what we talked about yesterday on Read 701 about a Lightning SDK and separating the node infrastructure and actually being able to provide node and channel liquidity and all of these different services without ever giving up custodianship, without ever giving up your keys. And it's so cool to see these technologies applied in really clever ways. And this one is about the potential dangers we have of mining pools, the centralization dangers, and how we could actually use Fetamint as a way to distribute that risk. So I will not lead anymore. We will get into Marty's Bent, issue 1318. But first, I just want to thank our amazing sponsors that make this show possible. Firstly, I want to thank CoinKite and the Cold Card for keeping my keys safe from dirty, nasty computers that are full of malware and security holes and everything. Well, my keys are on my Cold Card. They are safe, and I know I can use my Bitcoin without putting them at risk. And you guys can get 9% off with code BitcoinAudible. And then a thank you to Swan Bitcoin. They're a great place to actually learn how to use your hardware wallet and like how to set things up and how to think about it. They're an incredible educational resource, incredible place to buy Bitcoin cheaply, easily, and automatically. And they are simply the best onboarding service for Bitcoin. If you're looking for a place to start in Bitcoin, just go to swanbitcoin.com/guy. That's it. And lastly, if you're still stuck in fiat, earn sats back on everything you do in the fiat space. A debit card, not a credit card, a debit card that pays you sats back on every single thing that you purchase. I do not know of a simpler way to stack ongoing sats in small amounts that builds up very, very quickly and is just an amazing addition to your stacking abilities. Check them out at guyswan.com/fold, and you'll get 20,000 sats just for signing up. And with that, let's get into today's read, and it's titled Feta Pools as a Potential Solution to Centralization Risk. Marty's Bent, issue 1318. It is still early days, and this is nothing more than an idea at the moment. But your Uncle Marty thinks it is a very good idea that should gain traction. Tweet from Ryan Condren. Anyone see the mining pool stats recently? Foundry is now over 100 exahash. Ant Pool and Sub Pools is over 96 exahash. The top two pools equal 64% of the hash rate, and the top four pools are 93% of the hash rate. 93% of blocks are created by four entities. Time to pull the fire alarm. A lot has been said over the years about the threat that mining pool centralization poses to the Bitcoin network. The worry is that if one or a few mining pools amass an amount of hash rate that is larger than 51% of the total hash rate dedicated to the network, it will be trivial for the singular pool or a small cabal of pools to censor transactions and or 51% attack the network. As you can see from the tweet above from Ryan Condren, the Bitcoin mining pool industry is significantly centralized at the moment, with the top two pools accounting for 64% of the network hash rate, and the top four accounting for 93%. This is certainly a bit disconcerting, but there are a few things to consider with this data in mind. First, mining pools are economically incentivized to act in the best interest of their end clients, individual miners. Censoring transactions that yield higher revenues for their clients or disrupting the network via a 51% attack would not be a great look for a pool. Second, the emergence of Stratum V2 mitigates the censorship attack by allowing individual miners contributing shares to a pool to construct their own blocks with transactions they gather and order, though the pool still has to broadcast the block at the end of the day. If they decide not to broadcast a valid block, they run the risk of getting beat out by another pool and missing out on that revenue. Lastly, and most importantly, it is trivial for an individual miner to direct their hash at another pool. If an individual miner ever deems that the pool they are using is a bad actor or has amassed too much hash rate, they can redirect their hash to another pool within seconds. In fact, we saw this exact scenario play out in 2014 when ghash.io amassed more than 51% of the network hash rate at the time, and miners made a quick exodus from the pool to competitors. Even though these loose incentives are in place to drive good behavior at the pool level, the assurances are still subpar. Bitcoiners have been attempting to devise ways to further distribute risk at the pool level to reduce the potential for censorship and 51% attacks as much as possible. As we already stated, Stratum V2 is a step in the right direction, but outside of that, there hasn't really been any material progress to mitigate these risks. Bob McElrath has been attempting to get support for Braid Pool, a mining pool protocol that would move the network back in the direction of P2 Pool, which was a peer-to-peer mining pool that was launched in 2011, but ultimately got outcompeted by centralized pools over time, and has been rendered obsolete today. Though Braid Pool seems like a good idea on paper, it hasn't gained much traction or enthusiasm from the market. This is probably due to the fact that Braid Pool requires a DAG architecture and dedicated token that many think will be hard to bootstrap. Enter Fetipools, a concept introduced to the world last week by our brother Matt Odell after a discussion he had during a recent Fetiment retreat. Excerpt from Matt Odell's blog, discreetlog.com. Fetiment as a potential solution. Fetiment is an emerging open source protocol that combines Bitcoin, Lightning, Chaumian eCash, and federated custodians, called Guardians, to create community wallets that are easy to use, have strong privacy, reduced custodial risk, cheap and fast payments within the community, and interoperability with all Bitcoin wallets. Current Fetiment development is focused on easy-to-use consumer wallets that could replace usage of major custodial wallet providers, such as Binance and Wallet of Satoshi. But what if the same tech was used to replace major custodial mining pools, such as Foundry and Ant Pool? How a Fetiment might look. A group of independent miners choose to create a Fetiment together. Their combined hash rate results in reduced payout variance. They are paid more frequently and predictably than if they mined alone. Rather than a single pool operator constructing blocks and choosing which transactions to include, each guardian can construct their own blocks, reducing censorship risk. Additional miners can join the pool in the future to take advantage of the above, But rather than be a guardian, they choose which guardian they want to construct their blocks. End excerpt. After reading Matt's write-up and having some discussions with him and others, Vetipools seem like a perfect middle ground between the mining pool landscape that exists today and the goals set out in the Braid Pool proposal. A middle ground that seems very attainable once Fediments become widely adopted. I won't rehash the points Matt makes in his piece highlighted above, but I will expand on them. If Fedipools proved to be viable, we could find ourselves in a world where Bitcoin mining pool centralization risk is significantly reduced and the worries that many have today cease to exist. By creating a federation of different miners who act as guardians of a mint dedicated to producing blocks and distributing rewards, you create a completely new and more robust incentive model at the pool layer. Due to the nature of how Fediments work, it will be significantly easier to punish bad actors, since a pool would be made up of a federation of mid to large sized miners that smaller miners would be able to allocate block construction duties to. The risk of transaction censorship and lost revenue is significantly reduced. Miners would easily be able to look at the block health of particular blocks, determine whether an individual guardian is censoring transactions over time, and opt to either pick another guardian to do block construction on their behalf or have them removed from the federation altogether. The nature of how Fediments have been designed makes it so individual guardians can be removed and replaced without disrupting the functionality of the individual mint. From what I understand, a bit more work needs to be done to make this process seamless, but progress is being made and it should be possible soon. With the ability to levy this type of punishment on an individual guardian in place, block constructors are highly disincentivized to misbehave. On top of this, miners will gain access to features that they have wanted for quite some time at the pool layer, mainly more private payouts and payouts via the Lightning Network. And with the modular nature of Fediments, it wouldn't be surprising to see Fedipools offer value-added financial services on top of their vanilla pool payout functionalities. It is still early days, and this is nothing more than an idea at the moment. But your Uncle Marty thinks it's a very good idea that should gain traction. We'll keep you freaks abreast of developments as they materialize. Final thought. Nothing like an 80-degree day in February to improve your mood. Alright, that wraps up the piece on Fedipools, using the Fediment architecture in order to distribute centralized services, and what better to decentralize a little bit, to distribute across multiple parties, than mining pools. So I want to talk about this problem and this as a solution. There's some really fun stuff to dig into, and there's particularly one or two things that Marty just mentions in this post that I think are just really, really exciting and are really good framing for where I think things are going in general. And I'm going to do a guy's take really soon on what I think the major shift in the internet is going to be, like what we should be looking out for in the not too distant future, and why I think it's going to be a huge, huge deal. I think we're going to see, and I don't mean it just in like Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a critical piece of making this possible, but essentially there's going to be a new weight to things on the internet, a new data point that we have that we've never had before, and it's going to alter how we relate to all of the information online. But I want to get into kind of the big picture view, the history, and then why I think this is going to be such a big deal soon in a Guys Take episode. So it's going to be totally separate from this. Right now, I want to talk about Fedipools, Fediments, and just the idea of federated services. And what happens when you make the barrier to creating these things, to issuing a federated network, when you lower the barrier to like a very, very simple, like point and click almost setup, what you can then do with that. Now let's hit our sponsor for today really quick, and then we will jump back in. And they are CoinKite and the Cold Card Hardware Wallet. Now we're going to talk a lot about Bitcoin keys in the Basics episode 3. But the conclusions that you will learn is that the keys are the most important part of your ownership of Bitcoin. They are the only thing that means you own Bitcoin. And your goal is to protect them, to keep them safe, and to keep them away from security hole-riddled computers and network devices. And that is why you get a cold card. It is a hardened, locked-down device that refuses to let go of its keys under any circumstance. You generate the keys securely on the device, and then when you want to interact with a computer that's riddled with malware and terrible security practices, it sends the transaction data and you sign it on your cold card and then broadcast it to the internet. And that dirty computer that's just riddled with STDs because it's plugged into everything is of no threat to you because you always wear protection on your keys with the cold card hardware wallet. Now there is even a brand new cold card on the way, the cold card Q1, with the QR code scanner, with a large screen, and with a full QWERTY keyboard. So many features, and so it's such a versatile device, and it looks cool. It is a tiny cypherpunk fortress for your Bitcoin keys. Always carry protection. And you can get 9% off your cold card and everything else in your cart with the code Bitcoin Audible, all one word, and it is available right in the show notes with a link for your incredible convenience. So first thing is, I like that Marty frames this discussion with Ghash.io, which was there was a huge stink back in the day when mining pools were kind of becoming the norm, and then they were growing and changing a lot, especially during transitionary periods, because, you know, we went from CPU mining to GPU mining. I remember I almost got a bunch of FPGAs when they came out, which are just kind of like poor man ASICs, field programmable gate arrays. And they were like a step function improvement over GPUs, and then ASICs just blew everything out of the water. It was when mining became its own industry, and it was so crazy. Like, things were changing so quickly, and hash power was as volatile as the Bitcoin price. And I mean it like in a matter of like weeks and months, the amount of hash power that it would change on the network. Like, if you pre-ordered a miner and, you know, you got it when they said, you could have just made bukus and bukus of Bitcoin. And if you got it 5 months late, you made nothing. Like, it was changing so unbelievably fast. But in that mix, in that environment, Ghash.io was a really, really popular pool. And at some point, they just kept growing. You know, network effects really, really benefit mining pools. Because the whole idea of a mining pool is that I'm sure everybody knows this, but just in case, a mining pool is a bunch of people working together to kind of behave like they are a single miner, and then the pool separates out the payments to everybody who contributed hash power. So the idea of Bitcoin is that everybody's playing this lottery. But I don't, like, for instance, like my miners here in the house, I'm using Brains Pool, just because I trust the company. They've been around for a long time and they do a lot of work, and like their book, and they seem like a very trustworthy and reputable company and pool. So even though they have lesser hash power, less obviously than Foundry and Antpool and these things, but even though they have less, I prefer to use them because I don't really know a whole lot about the other pools. But therein lies kind of proof that this is a trusted relationship. Like, I am trusting them to provide good hash power or provide valid blocks, and they're essentially the custodian, so to speak, of what I am mining, as well as my funds until I withdraw them. But because of that, every single time Brains Pool finds a block, even though it might have taken me 3 years, I'm an idiot. I've got two Watts miner M30s. It would have taken me my entire life to find a block by myself. Instead, I get, you know, $2 or $3 every time a block comes in that Brains Pool mines, because I'm contributing a very, very tiny fraction of all of Brains Pool hash power. So that's great for me. I don't have to mine essentially for free waiting for my lottery ticket to come. I'm going in with a giant pool of people, and every time somebody in the mix wins a lottery ticket, we split it among everybody. This is great, except the obvious problem of now we have a centralized entity deciding what goes into a block. Now, Ghash.io was, as you can see, obviously this would benefit from network effects very, very well, because obviously the bigger you are, the more likely you are going to find a block, and the more consistently you will find blocks, even among, you know, like if you have 5% of the network hash power, you might expect 5% of the blocks, but you're also, there's a decent possibility that you spend a whole day and everybody's mining together and you never find a block because you only have a 1 in 20 chance. Whereas if you had 50% of the network hash rate, you have a 50% chance every single time a block comes in. That's a much more reliable payment schedule. And thus, mining pools tend to centralize. Ghash.io actually broke 51% of the hash power. And this is when we weren't on Bitcoin Twitter or Bitcoin Noster, we were on Bitcoin Reddit. That was where most people, Bitcoin Reddit and the Bitcoin Talk forums, this is where everybody was at the time. And I remember hearing about this, and you know, it was probably one of the times that I actually did like a bit of a deep dive on mining pools and stuff, even though I had basically this shallow understanding of how they work and what they are. But I remember everybody was flipping out. It was, we were like, oh my God, Ghash is going to destroy the network. And everybody was losing their minds. And it was funny, like Ghash is like issuing a statement. It's like, we're just doing a good job. Like, we're not going to attack the net. Why would the hell would we attack the network? And what was crazy is that it was kind of the first time people had mused about these concerns. And Ghash.io, the point that they reached 51%, I think they got up to like 54% or something for like a hot second. But everybody, like people started to pull their hash power very, very quickly. And this is something that's really important, is that the dissent against a mining pool trying to commit some sort of an attack or doing something that seems to be a clear form of censorship, the defense that I and the thousands, tens of thousands of other individual miners that are plugged into these pools that we have is to just log out. It's not that difficult. The problem is that it's not being managed by my node. It's not being managed. Like, I would have to know and then actively go and log out. It requires me to be aware, it requires me to be paying attention, and that's not a great incentive model. That's a decent incentive model for like a mild business relationship or, you know, customer, client server relationships or a customer and a, you know, service provider or something. It's easy to keep those things in check under those situations. The problem with Bitcoin is that it's such a massive, I mean, it is the consensus system that enables Bitcoin to be trustless. So if we are relying as a part of operating in that consensus system, we are relying on a new place where trust is re-involved, we set ourselves up for a significant single point of failure. And despite the fact that that is a pretty easy way to keep these mining pools in check, it would be reactive, not preventative. Well, the threat of it is preventative, but it cannot prevent them from engaging in this act if they choose to. As a centralized pool, they're going to, you know, they could do a 51% attack on a couple of blocks, and then everybody would get mad and withdraw and, you know, exit and all of that stuff. But the mining pool could rug pull everybody who's, you know, kept funds on the service. And I've always thought that, you know, it's something that I saw with Lightning, and it makes a lot of sense that this would be the first thing. You know, like one of the first markets in Lightning, one of the first peer-to-peer or non-custodial markets that existed in Lightning was for liquidity on Lightning, right? Is that it was a service and a market around solving the inefficiencies and the hang-ups that happen on the Lightning network. And this is essentially how the improvements and the expansion of this market and the tooling in this market basically led to LSPs, Lightning Service Providers. And now there's actually a pretty interesting and exciting market that's happening in a bunch of different disparate places. And, you know, even plebs who do this as like kind of a pseudo small business sort of like philosophy, like mindset. They're like prosumer tinkerers, so to speak. But there's social markets for, you know, finding people to open channels with. There's reputation markets. There's the liquidity, the Lightning liquidity pool. There's LSPs, like I said, you know, the Breeze SDK. They're separating the node infrastructure, like with Greenlight and these things, from the user, but still retaining key control. Like, they've started to split this up. They've started to find and optimize and clean up all of these different things, and they're turning Lightning and the provision of liquidity and non-custodial relationships to build out a payment network into a robust, highly variant or like many different options and many different people to trust and not trust marketplace. It's becoming its own economy, and thus all of these second and tertiary use cases and value adds are beginning to pop up because it's starting to just work, or it has been working for quite some time. In a similar way, I think there are going to be things that develop with mining. And one of the most important things I think we could develop is a protocol for mining pools. Because if you could have a decentralized protocol that was properly and sufficiently decentralized, you could essentially have the entire network behave as a single pool. And it wouldn't be a problem because the protocol is what decentralizes it and ensures that, you know, the block production is still central, censorship resistant, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's a wonderful aspiration, but it's a whole lot easier said than done. It's a little bit trying to solve a consensus problem around a consensus mechanism, which is the problem to begin with. However, the fact that we have Bitcoin, that we have that immutable ownership of the Bitcoin chain, of the Bitcoin time chain and its history, and as we begin to roll out these systems where we begin to relate to each other as public-private key pairs, that, you know, my ID on Nostr is cryptographically proven, and everything I say and everything, everybody I interact with is natively encrypted in DM and natively verified because I sign everything that I publish from my ID. When we start to get into this territory where you can begin to use the tools in Bitcoin itself and the second layers built on top of it to distribute the risk of services. Like, this is essentially what Lightning is doing by creating non-custodial payment network systems. Like, this is trust as a service. This is trust as a programmable part of an arrangement. You start thinking about the concepts of like how proof of work even does its job, and you start talking about fidelity bonds and these ideas of security deposits where you can essentially require that someone have Bitcoin locked up to be punished in an effort to that, you know, other people couldn't even have explicit control over. Like, it's not something that they could steal, but that they could maybe burn those funds if, you know, another party did something wrong. Like, that's how RoboSats, I've been digging into RoboSats. I haven't actually used it yet, but it's a peer-to-peer Bitcoin place to buy and sell Bitcoin without KYC, and it uses this model of like of a fidelity bond where essentially it's collateralized for if something goes wrong, that you can punish each party, so you can do it quote-unquote trustlessly or trust minimized, because basically everyone is in for the trade and nobody can walk away positive if they try to screw the other person, because they're using Bitcoin tools, they're using the Bitcoin technology in order to prove the staking, prove the skin in the game of the equivalent amount of value, even though they're off in the fiat world. But this, Fetapools, is another fascinating way to begin to separate, to use Bitcoin's tools and the technologies and networks we've built on top of it in order to distribute the risk of some sort of service. So Chalmi and eCash has been around for early 90s, maybe? When did Chalm, David Chalm, make eCash? I don't know. I feel like it's like 93, 94 era. But regardless, he created eCash, and it's essentially it's blind signatures. It was he actually anticipated or envisioned a world where banks offered this. And what it was is a digital bearer token, which just means that as long as you have the keys, you own it, redeemable at a bank. So essentially the bank could allow you to have a digital token that you could trade outside of the bank, in a sense. And they could, quote, blind sign it. They could sign it without knowing what was going on. They could essentially prove that it was from their batch of tokens and that the transaction was valid without being able to see anything inside of it. So the idea was actually, or a good visualization is, you know, the carbon paper, where if you, you know, write on the top paper, like underneath it, it makes the mark on the paper underneath. Well, imagine a carbon paper transaction where all the details of the transaction are written and they're put into an envelope. And then the bank signs the front of the envelope. Doesn't know what's inside, has no clue how much is being transacted, who it's being transacted with. They're simply signing the envelope to, you know, in a mathematical way. Obviously, they have to be able to guarantee certain characteristics about the transaction, but they are able to do this because math and cryptography, fancy stuff. But they signed the transaction. They signed the envelope without ever actually seeing the transaction. So only, like, if I'm sending it to you, no one can see inside the envelope except for me and you, even though there may be a third party verifying and signing it. Fedimints are that for Bitcoin. And the way that the mint, the token itself, they have to issue the eCash separately. So essentially, you're putting Bitcoin into this system, and then you're getting eCash in return, Bitcoin eCash. While what you're actually doing with the Bitcoin is using a federated multi-sig address with a bunch of different quote-unquote providers, or I guess guardians is what they are referred to as. But essentially, you're building a community, and you are spreading out the trust risk that, okay, like maybe you listen to the show, you feel like you know me, we've met at the meetups and we've met at, you know, Bitcoin conferences and we've hung out. So you're like, okay, I would trust Guy to run, to be a part of a Fedimint or to run like a payment system that I knew I could even have privacy from Guy in the transactions that I do. But I trust that he's pretty competent and he's pretty trustworthy, seems like an okay dude. But, you know, it would be really nice if I could also just trust BTC Sessions to keep him in check. And then I could also trust Corey Clipston to keep BTC Sessions and Guy in check. And then also, I want to throw Will Reeves in there from Fold, because Corey can be a bit of a wild card. And now, instead of trusting any one person, because, I mean, they could all be perfectly trustworthy, and then one of them gets hacked, you know? Like you need to, there's a lot of different reasons why you want to separate out this risk. And in the end, if you have a simple, incredibly low barrier way to set up this system, and it's incredibly easy for anyone to be a guardian and for guardians to enter into and leave this arrangement or to be punished by people in the system of guardians, you're essentially able to create custodial relationships with no single custodian. And while there are incredible custodial services like Wallet of Satoshi, like the, you know, Native Lightning and Blue Wallet, Binance Wallet is one of the other ones he mentioned here. There are plenty of custodial services with a lot of great features and that are really popular, but they are central entities. They could lose the funds. How much better would it be if we could distribute that service among a number of different persons, and even better, distribute it from across a ton of different jurisdictions. But the coolest thing with this is not merely that it's a distributed service. It's that it can interoperate with all of the other pieces of the Bitcoin system. So, like, right now we think of Lightning nodes and Lightning users as individual users, but Fediment could be a really fascinating way to have essentially channel pools where you have large multi-sig arrangements between, you know, 10 people, 20 people, 50 people or something, that where you can actually trade amongst yourselves and send funds amongst yourselves and payments, but then integrate with Lightning, that you can send payments out from the eCash network into another eCash network, into another Fediment, by using Lightning as the settlement rail between them. It is a modular network on top that can easily speak all the different Bitcoin languages. And what you end up having is these federated sort of privacy pools, because, you know, that's the beauty of the eCash, right? Is as long as you're within the pool, you have privacy from everyone. But you basically have these hubs of smaller communities that can cross, that do, you know, more, or tend to do more business within themselves. Like, you know, imagine if we had like a bunch of people on Noster right now, the land of Nostriches, excuse me. That's what I'm supposed to call it, thanks to my brother and his sat boost. Imagine we have like the pleb chain, or we get like a group of people together and like literally create our own like Fediment network in the same way that we're creating Nostr relays. And then anybody who wanted to tip or purchase some product or service from each other, or, you know, make an agreement, it's all private within the community. And then you use a guardian essentially to communicate into and out of Lightning and a Bitcoin atomic swap, like on-chain transaction and all of these different things, so that you can, from your eCash wallet, you can still just send to a Bitcoin address, to a Lightning address, to another eCash address, to another eCash network that is able to convert payment from one form to another. And think about how many different financial services and additional things, like you start to stack these things on top of each other, and then you have a network, you have a way to prove identities and build up reputations, and you have a way to split up trust among, you know, different parties based on their reputation, and then you have a punishment system within it, and you've separated out this risk. Like, it's such an interesting way to start rethinking how we build and relate to people who provide us a service, or to machines that provide, like computers that provide us a service. But Fediments are just something that we'll be digging back into a little bit more down the road. We've read one piece, and I will put it in the show notes. I believe it was Alex Gladstein's piece about Fediments. A really cool, really fascinating idea, and hats off to Odell for this idea. It's a really, really clever use for it. I'm super excited to see this extended. And also thank you to Marty Bent, obviously, for writing this in his Daily Bent. I don't remember who sent this to me, but somehow it got in my read list, and I was like, this just sounds fascinating. So I thought I would cover it today. We will be back tomorrow with Bitcoin Basics Episode 3 on keys. And this is another one of those very critical fundamental stuff before we get into the more direct and practical things that the user does. But obviously keys are the other thing that's really, really important to understand your relationship to, because that is your relationship to Bitcoin. This is the ultimate in who are you to Bitcoin and why do you own it? So don't forget to subscribe, and I will catch you all on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. Till then, everybody, take it easy, guys. A lot of people automatically dismiss e-currency as a lost cause because of all the companies that failed since the 1990s. I hope it's obvious it was only the centrally controlled nature of these systems that doomed them. I think this is the first time we're trying a decentralized, non-trust-based system. Satoshi Nakamoto.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.